Good morning, everybody. I am simply timing myself. All right, because I do get wordy. So the spiritual theme of the month, as we know, is change. And intellectually, we all know that progress cannot be achieved without change, and that while change is often painful and difficult, we bear that pain knowing that what awaits us on the other side will be worth the discomfort. Like moving. Everybody hates the burden of packing up a house, leaving fond memories and kind neighbors behind, but knowing that you're going to have a new house that's bigger or perhaps in a better neighborhood makes a person accept the pain and realizes that in order to have that positive change, that pain must come first. But what about the change we do not ask for? The change that comes unbidden and without an obvious reward on the other side? How do we accept the changes in our lives that may seem burdensome or unfair or painful? How do we welcome that change, or at the very least learn to live with it, maybe even find a way to feel gratitude for it? In my life, I found that it's all a matter of perspective. And I hope you indulge me that my sermon is mostly about me. And because I'm not a minister, I'm not coming at you with religion, but rather experience from my own life, and which I think, as we are all humans, we can all learn from each other's experiences. So here's my story. In the spring of 2008, something strange began to happen to my body. I wasn't sleeping well, I felt dizzy a lot, and I was having heart palpitations. Worst of all, I couldn't focus enough to read or write. And as a person who makes her living from writing, this was a terrible blow to endure. I started going to a variety of different doctors, complaining of this hodgepodge of symptoms that seemed to come and go, but mostly they were coming. My primary care physician said I was just an overworked mother and I needed to rest. A neurologist readjusted a kink in my neck and said I would be fine. An endocrinologist told me there was absolutely nothing wrong with my endocrine system. So I may feel sick, but I really wasn't sick. And then the summer hit. Coincidentally, it was about this same time of the year. It was actually the 4th of July weekend. I remember it very well because I was rushed to the hospital with a raging fever and I had caught pneumonia from one of my children. I stayed in the hospital for 4 days, being pumped full of mega doses of antibiotics and steroids, but still that fever wouldn't break. And when I finally returned home, I was told to take it easy and rest because it takes a long time to heal from pneumonia. But being me, I didn't rest long enough and I had a relapse and had to return to the hospital. More drugs, more steroids, more antibiotics, and then just a few days after leaving, I was back in the emergency room covered in hives. Presumably, the doctor said, a delayed reaction to all of the drugs I'd been given to cure me of the pneumonia. Needless to say, by this point, I was a mess. Not only was I recovering from pneumonia, I still had all of these other symptoms that I'd had from before. I was really miserable. I couldn't drive. I had to take the semester off from teaching. I couldn't write, except little scratches in my diary, keeping track of just how miserable I really was. As soon as I was able to, I went to see a homeopathic doctor, hoping an alternative practitioner could help me with all of these awful symptoms, which now included breaking out into hives at any given moment. The homeopath believed that my symptoms would be alleviated by restricting what I ate, so he put me on a very restricted diet. No wheat, no sugar, no corn, no fungus, which means mushrooms. Not like I was eating fungus on a regular basis. It just meant I couldn't eat mushrooms. No dairy, no nuts, no eggs, no yeast. Yes, I was pretty much living off of meat and vegetables. And coincidentally, at this time, we were redoing our kitchen. So all I had to work with this very limited diet was a toaster oven and a microwave. I asked my doctor how long would I have to live this way, and he simply shrugged his shoulders and said we had to see how my body responded. Good people, at this moment I have to pause because I have to let you I have to make sure you understand that the one thing in the world that makes me very happy is food. I love eating food. I love cooking food. I love eating with my friends. I love cooking for my family. I love to bake with my children. I like to go out to dinner with my husband. So now with this recipe for recovery that had me restricted to this diet of meat and vegetables, I couldn't even eat a piece of fruit because of the sugar. My love affair with food was officially over, and it was a very painful breakup. But guess what? I did start to feel better. The heart palpitations, gone. The sleepless nights, gone. Fuzzy brain and dizziness, a thing of the past. It didn't happen right away, it did take time, but I started realizing that I could think clearly again. I was sleeping soundly again, but I wasn't eating. My body was well on its way to recovery, but it required an iron will of self-negation. What's more, it completely disrupted our family dynamics. We couldn't go out as a family to our usual dinner, breakfast, or ice cream spots because I couldn't eat anything on a menu at any restaurant. Making a meal for the family became either depriving my family of normal food or making separate food for myself. Socializing with other people became really awkward if we were invited to their house, as I either had to bring my food with me or nibble on carrots and sip water in the corner and try not to insult the host. After months of living like this, I fell into a bit of a depression. Because while I physically felt better, mentally I felt like I was in a prison of sorts. I just wanted a cookie, a banana, a piece of toast, a scrambled egg. I'd been following my doctor's orders and was waiting for something to change, but it didn't. I envisioned the rest of my life eating chicken and green beans and growing into a bitter, unhappy, lonely person. And then, of course, I also felt guilty for crying over pancakes past and future. But still, it was torture for me. The changes in my life seemed so cruel and so unfair. And then one day, I was talking to one of the wise women in my life about rejection. Yes, we were talking about dealing with rejection in our lives as writers. She had just had a book proposal that she'd worked long and hard on, and it had been rejected by all of the publishers that she'd sent it to. While she wasn't negating the pain she felt upon hearing that her work would not be turned into a book, the way she dealt with the pain felt instructive to me and my situation. She said to me, "Lori, I could sit around and feel sorry for myself, or I could just change my perspective on it and realize that while I love the idea of that book, since I can't write it, now I have the time and mental energy to pursue this class that I've been wanting to take but haven't had the time because of all the time I've been putting into writing the book. It sounds cliche, but when that door closed, I started looking for the open windows, and I found one. Two, actually, because not only am I going to take that class, I'm taking a vacation, which I haven't had the time to do." My friend at the time didn't know how miserable I was, but her words made so much sense to me. I was busy feeling sorry for myself, and I needed to find some open windows. So I thought about it and realized I actually had lost a lot of weight. All those pounds that I hadn't been able to shed since having my two sons were gone. Window one. Window number two. I saved our family a lot of money since we couldn't go out and eat all the time. Window number three, I learned how to cook some really creative things with a toaster oven and a microwave and just two or three ingredients. Window number four, I stopped feeling sorry for myself long long enough to be grateful that my new dairy-free, gluten-free, nut-free, soy-free, sugar-free lifestyle coincided with the dairy-free, gluten-free, nut-free, soy-free, corn-free craze all over the planet. You should have seen me when I found gluten-free bread, pan sin gluteno, in the south of Spain. I was so happy. Eventually, my doctor allowed me to add certain foods back into my diet. And each new food that I got to have was like a revelation. Sweet blueberries, the richness of a fried egg, and I will tell you not, I licked the plate after eating a fried, just an egg. It was so good. Fresh corn on the cob, a juicy crisp red apple, gluten-free pancakes. I still can't eat pancakes with wheat in them, or donuts, which used to be my favorite food group. But I wouldn't dare complain because there's so much I can eat, so very much. So at the end of the day, this perspective therapy saved me. And I use it all of the time now when I find myself in a place of depression or despair. When things change and I resent it, I try to see the other side of things. I try to shift the angle on the problem. I try to remember that there is another way, that by shifting my perspective, I might find a reason to be grateful, even for the pain that might be coming into my life. Here's what Eileen Flanagan wrote in her book, The Wisdom to Know the Difference, about how effective using an attitude of gratitude is in changing one's perspective. She writes, "Gratitude is a habit recommended by every spiritual tradition as well as by contemporary science. Recent research has confirmed what humans have known for centuries, that counting your blessings really does change your perspective. It's not just that we should feel grateful. Feeling grateful changes us. One study showed representative results. When participants were asked to find something to appreciate every day, they felt better about their lives. They were more optimistic. They were more energetic. They were more enthusiastic. They were more determined. They were more joyful. They exercised more. They had fewer illnesses. They got more sleep, and they were more likely to have helped someone else." These results show that finding something to appreciate may be one of the most effective ways to change your outlook. It is much easier than overcoming difficult feelings like fear or anger, though focusing on blessings can diminish those feelings as well. It is also a habit that need not be time-consuming. So you see, cultivating an attitude of gratitude, and it rhymes, you can remember it, that's always helpful. An attitude of gratitude is the way to get to the other side. It is the way to change your perspective, and it is the way to making peace with those changes that you did not ask for. But let me be clear, I don't want anyone setting themselves up for failure with this new self-help suggestion that I'm making. I don't want anyone assailing me at church next Sunday asking for their money back because the perspective therapy doesn't work. I have to let you in on a little secret. Perspective therapy usually requires a certain amount of time passing before it really works well. Think of it like fine wine or a good spice rub on a Sunday roast. It requires time to marinate. Food, it's always in there with me. If you had told me at the doctor's office when I was being prescribed that restrictive diet that I should look on the bright side and be happy I'd lose some weight, I probably would have punched you. Only later, when a significant amount of time had passed, could I look back and see what good had come from the changes in my life. There's a short poem by Mary Oliver that gets at this point. It's called The Uses of Sorrow. It reads, very simply, "Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this too was a gift." It took years to understand that this too was a gift. So here's another example from my life. I was in my mid-20s and working happily at my first magazine job. I thought that this was going to be the place that I launched my career as a writer. This was a dream I'd had my entire life, to be a writer. So I was there, and after almost a year, I was offered a promotion. I didn't take the promotion, though, because I knew it wouldn't lead me directly to my dream job as a writer. So they hired somebody else. And the woman they hired, as soon as she arrived at the position, she made it known that she was going to fire me. I was devastated. However, a colleague took pity on me and sent me on an interview at another magazine. I went begrudgingly. I was still just really mad that my plans had been changed, that I wasn't going to stay at my first magazine that I really loved. And I was really mad at that woman, thinking that she had the control to ruin my life just like that. But guess what? The new job was so much better. I got to be a writer. I wrote my first book while I was there. I had benefits. That wouldn't have happened had I stayed at the first magazine where I was a permanent freelancer. So while I used to curse the name of, I'll just call her Moulin Rouge, now I consider Moulin the patron saint of my writing career. A similar thing happened to a rabbi that Eileen Flanagan mentions in her book. His name is Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi, and he was fired as well from his first congregation in a way that he felt was truly unfair. He wrote, quote, "For years, my mind flashed red with anger whenever I thought about this act of human injustice," unquote. But then he realized that his life was so much better because of where he landed. And he said, quote, "If my so-called malefactor had not fired me, I would probably still be in my first pulpit." These days, the rabbi reminds himself to be grateful with a Thanksgiving party in his mind every year. He imagines all the people whom he could hold a grudge against and thanks them for whatever gift their actions brought. This practice helps him to feel at peace. So, perspective therapy does work, but it's not a quick fix. It's more of a way of life that requires one to move beyond anger and come to a place where contemplation and gratitude can emerge. Think of cultivating gratitude or finding perspective as a practice. Think back to the gratitude practice I read as the earlier reading, that it's something you can do every single day at the end of the day, even if you can't think of one thing that seems happy on that day. Maybe you're thankful for your health. Maybe you're thankful to be alive on this planet. Maybe you're thankful that the sun shone. But there's always something. Sometimes I use perspective therapy for the big picture, too. I often feel dismayed, discouraged, and disgruntled by the seemingly endless negative news cycle reporting on the plight of Black Americans, the Republicans' refusal to acknowledge global climate change, and the fact that professional athletes make more money than public school teachers. I can't help but think this country is a horrible, rotten place and I should move to Canada as soon as possible. But my wise woman friend reminded me again, get some perspective. You were born in one of the richest countries in the world, granting you privileges many people on the planet would cut off their left toe for. You eat healthy food. You have choices on where and how to educate your children. You have choices in almost everything you do. You can get up in the middle of the night and have a glass of water without having to walk 5 miles to get it. And there are millions of people who would love to trade places with you right now. Think about that. And that is usually enough to remind me not to be complacent in the face of these very real injustices, but to remind me to be grateful and to give myself the strength to change the world one step at a time. Here's what I'm grateful for today. My family, my parents are here in the audience. Hi, Mom and Dad. My health, I was in the hospital on Friday having surgery, and I'm standing here before you right now. And I am so grateful because I was given a possible prognosis that could have been a death sentence, but it's not. I am healthy, and that unwanted change came to my life, and I didn't know this morning if I was going to be happy and grateful that I'm not ill, or I was going to have to find a reason to be grateful for the illness coming to my life, and I'm so very grateful that it is health that I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for my children's health. I'm grateful that all of you are here listening to me. I am grateful for this church building that we're standing in and so much more. Abraham Lincoln once said, "We can complain because rose bushes have thorns, or rejoice because thorn bushes have roses." I'm going to go with the joy of the roses on the thorn bush. I hope you will too. Blessings be. Amen.